Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahana Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vakitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
One verse three, it's actually after these two introductory prayer verses. One was a prayer verse, and then one was really telling why he's beginning this teaching, and for whom. So now he starts. Shabdasparashadiyo vidyaha. Vaichitriyan jagare prithak. Tato vibhakta tat samvit. Ekarupyan vidyate. Shabda sparsha adiyaha. Vedyaha vaichitriyat. Jagare patak tataha vibhakta tat samvit ekarupyat nibidyate. Okay. He's in this verse, so this is some type of drikdrisha viveka, seer seeing differentiation. What he says is shabda sparsha, etc. Shabda means your sense of hearing. The shabda are the sounds that you hear. Sparsha are the feelings, the touches that you touch. Rupa, the etc. means your forms that you see. Things that you taste, things that you touch, things that you see, things that you taste, things that you smell. Your the sense objects, the five sense objects. So he says the shabda sound, touch, etc. All of these things, vedyaha, which are known. They're objects of your knowledge. So any sense perception, we say that's an object of my knowledge. It's known to me. It's vedyaha. It's knowable. Okay. So all of these sense objects are known to me. And he says, vaichitriyat jagare pratek. All of these sense objects, which are known, they are, each one of them is pratek, separate. Pratek means separate from the other. Vaichitriyat jagare. Here, jagare means here, in this waking state, in this waking state, I experience through my sense organs these five sense objects, right? All of which are known, right? And he says, they are all separate from each other. They're individual and differentiated from each other because they're vaichitriya. Vichitra means, what's the word? Like manifold. Like, here's one thing, here's another thing, here's another thing, here's another thing, here's another thing. That's vaichitriya. So in this world that we perceive, in this waking state, this world that we perceive, these five sense objects, we see clearly there are many, many things here. Each object is separate and different from another. And so there's a manifold expression of duality in this creation that is perceived through our five sense organs. It's called the waking state. If a waking state means that I'm gaining thought modifications from the sense perception, right, from the five sense organs, that's how we define the waking state. The dream state, I'm not gaining knowledge from the five sense organs, they're impressions that are coming up at the time of dream, but my sense organs are in an unmanifest condition at that time, they're not functioning in the dream. So that's the difference between the waking and the dream. So here he says, in this waking state, when my five sense objects are functioning, right, all these things which are knowable, which are known, all of them are separate and diverse, right? But then he says, tataha vibhakta tat samvit. He says, but consciousness, samvit is another word for Chaitanya, for consciousness, samvit, feminine noun, samvit. Says the consciousness of those sense perceptions, sensory manifest sense perception, the samvit, tat samvit, the consciousness of them, vibhakta, is different than that. It's different than that. Right? We see all of these huge, manifold variety of many and varied things. Right? Kshatriya is many and varied. Right? Each one separate from another, separate from each other, and there are many different ones. That's the state of the world that we perceive through our sense perception. He says, but the consciousness, the one who is the consciousness of those sense perceptions, is different than that. He says, Eka rupyat nibidyate. It is not divided. Here we say, in the sense world, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this. We don't go to the conscious being and say, here's this, and here's this, and here's this. There's just one me. There's not two me's. So from the standpoint of the subject, there is one conscious being. From the standpoint of the object, now in terms of the world, in terms of sense perception, there are many. One, many. See that? So that's actually very important. You can't make two of you. There's one self who is the one consciousness that illumines the diversity, the many and very diverse perceptions that we have. The diversity that we experience in any given vritti, in any different thought modification. One self illumining many and varied diversity. See? Now he goes, this is kind of a little series that we have to look at. Let's go to the next verse, because these are all connected. So he says, Tata swap netra vedyam tu. Tata swap netra vedyam tu. Nastiram jagare stiram. Nastiram jagare stiram. Tad bedo testayo samvit. Tad bedo testayo samvit. Ekarupana bidyate. Ekarupana bidyate. Tata swapne atra vedyam tu nastiram jagare stiram tad bedaha attaha tayoho samvit ekarupa nibidyate. It says, similarly to this, in the dream state, right, in the dream, there are objects known also. The vedyam, the objects which are known similarly in the dreams, that are similar. Similarly, in the dream state, for these objects that are known. But, he says, there's a difference. There's a difference. In the dream state, the objects are not steady. They're not stable. So, nastiram. So, swapne nastiram. They're not stable. I'll tell you what that means in a minute. They're not stable. Whereas, jagare stiram, they are stable. What they mean by stable is this. If I go out the door, right, and I come back, this room is still here. It's still here. So it outlasts me in terms of time. Whereas with a dream, as I dream, it is there, but it's not steady. I could go outside into another room and never come back to this room. For all I know, this room doesn't exist. It did exist. It was here when it was here. But it need not be here a moment later. Right? And so the dream state, the contents that I'm experiencing in the dream state, kind of depend on the vrittis or the memories or the impressions that are coming up. Nevertheless, so that's the difference between the two. This, what we call the waking state, is not my projection. Right? I can't just say, well, let me go out of this room and have it just disappear. It's not going to happen. Right? I'm not responsible. I'm not the creator of all of these nama-rupas, of all of this world that I'm creating. I can project on it. I can project, you know, I can project my impressions onto it, my subjective reality onto it, but I can't wish this away. I can't wish to make this change. In the dream, that's not true. Just like also, in the imagination, that's not true. I could ask you to imagine a beautiful meadow and have a whole scene taking place in that meadow, but when you resolve the meadow, that meadow is gone. Somebody else now can't just walk into that meadow. Right? So it's not sthira, it's not steady, it's not firm. It's pratibhasika, it comes from your projection. So we acknowledge that difference between the waking state and the dream state. He says, that's true, that's different. But he says, that's different. That's the difference between the two that we accept. Waking is sthira, is steady, is firm, is objective. Dream state is subjective, it's not firm. He says, tad bedaha atatayoho. He says, therefore, because we accept that difference. That difference is clear, he goes. But he says, the samvit ekarupa nabidyate. But the consciousness of the dream state is not different. It is ekarupa, again, in the dream state, there is one consciousness and one dream that has many parts. Right? The dream is many and varied. The parts in the dream are many and varied. Infinitely divisible, in fact. Consciousness is not. Consciousness is eka. Consciousness is one. So now in the waking state and the dream state, we have differences, but there's a similarity. The similarity is this. Both are many and varied in terms of the objects are there. Right? Both are objectified. Right? The dream state and the waking state, both are objectified. Both are made of an infinite number of parts. The consciousness that illumines them in both cases is only one. Right? That's what they have in common. What they don't have in common is one is sthira, one is asthira. But that there is one being and illumining something that is many is exactly the same. So this is the important commonality between the waking state and the dreams, and the waking state and the dream state. And now he has to go to the deep sleep state. Because right? This is actually called the Avastatraya Sakshi, this part that we're doing right now. Stricture Shaviveka was each part. I can go into a little more depth in each part. But it's Avastatraya Sakshi. An Avasta is a state of experience. We say that if we were to give kind of an overarching definition of the states of experience you enjoy as a human being, we say they fall into three main categories. The waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. This is what makes up your day. Waking, dream, deep sleep. In each case, as we'll see, in the waking state, the dream state have something in common. What they have in common is that there's this multiplicity, you know, in the dream state, in the waking state and dream state. But there's one conscious being that illumines that multiplicity in both cases. Now, what about the deep sleep state? So we have to look at that and analyze these three.
Supto titasya saushupta. Tamo bodo bodo pavet smritihi. Tamo bodo pavet smritihi. Sacha vabuddha vishaya. Avabuddham tattadatamaha.
He says, in supto titasya, means for the one who is waking up from the deep sleep. Supta is deep sleep. Okay. For that person who is waking up from the deep sleep state, there is a knowledge, the knowledge of not knowing anything in the deep sleep. Saushupta means in the deep sleep state. Tamaha, the ajnanam, the ignorance that takes place in the deep sleep. That knowledge of that ignorance, smritihi bhavet, is remembered. You remember that state. This is really, people get very confused over this deep sleep. So let me just tell you how we view, how the Vedanta views the deep sleep state. It's very easy for us to understand really the waking and dream. We say, well, in the waking state, I am there. Me, this conscious being, am there in the waking. In the dream, it's my dream. I am there, this conscious being is there. But in the deep sleep, at that time, I don't know anything. Right? That's what I say. When I wake up, for the one who's waking up there, and they say, in that deep sleep, there is complete ajnanam. So I have knowledge of the ignorance of the deep sleep. That in the ignorance in the deep sleep, I have bodhaha. I'm aware of the ignorance in the deep sleep. When? Not when I'm in deep sleep, because there's no, the whole antakarana, the whole mind is in unmanifest condition. Right? So the antakarana, your mind, the vritti, goes into its causal condition or unmanifest condition. But that unmanifest condition is what is illumined by consciousness. So say you have, this is our problem, we have an awake vritti that is gaining all this data through sense perception. Your ahankara is working, right? Your ahankara means I am seeing this, I am doing that, I am experiencing that. The ahankara is working. Your memories are working. Your emotions are working. And the ahankara is coming along identifying with all of these things. But all of the experiences in the waking state that are really generated, you know, through your sense perception, all of these experiences, even the experience of the ahankara, the I notion commenting upon what you're doing in that state, that is illumined. Say if I said, oh, look, I'm seeing outside the window a beautiful bush. Right? Say I say that. Now, am I aware that I just said that? Am I aware that I just said, I am seeing a bush outside the window? Yeah, I'm aware of that. You know, if I say, you know, if I listen carefully in the distance, I can hear the birds. Right? So now I've made a statement about what I am doing. I am hearing the birds. I am seeing the bush. You know, all of these things, all of these ahankara statements are, I am aware of, I illumine them, you know. What if I were to say, like, you know, something like, you know, I'm turning into a monkey. Right now, I'm turning into a monkey. Right? I'm not turning into a monkey, right? But I say I'm turning into a monkey. It's a ridiculous statement. Okay? Am I aware of it? Am I aware of the ridiculous statement? Yeah, I'm aware. If I say, you know, the sky is black. Then I say, no, the sky is not black. But the sky is black. That's a ridiculous statement. The sky is not black. But whether I say a ridiculous statement or a true statement, I'm aware of either one. Whatever's being said, I'm aware of. But it gives me confidence, you know, that I'm here, that consciousness is here. I'm confident that I'm awake. Right? And that gives me a sense that I am, that I exist, because I am a knower of all of the experiences. This is how I think of it. All of the experiences, all of the vrittis that are coming through, I am awake to, I am aware of. See what I mean? Now, who is awake? This is the thing. Consciousness itself, the one that illumines the experience, say it's a waking state experience that are giving vrittis, thought modifications through your sense perception. Consciousness is illumining that, right? And it's in illumining your entire commentary on that. It's illumining the whole thing. Now we go to the dream state. Same consciousness is illumining the dream state with all the activity that's taking place in the dream state. You're identified with the knower, or you have a lot to report. There's a lot happening. There's familiar territory. Consciousness is illumining that. Okay, and so now I am the dreamer, because there's something there to be known. So now I'm the dreamer that feels like myself. When I wake up and talk about the dream, I say, I am the knower of the dream. So all familiar territory. I, in the waking state, I am the knower of this world. In the dream state, when I wake up and talk about it, I am the knower of the dream world. And in fact, when the dream world is taking place, I'm either the knower of the dream as Ishwara, or I'm the knower of the dream by being identified with a character in the dream. So in either case, waking a dream, consciousness is illumining this subject-object relationship. And I am used to being a subject who is the knower of an object. That subject-object duality, that's what, when I think of myself as consciousness, that's how I think of me. is a conscious being conscious of something. So waking dream is fine. But now in the deep sleep, when the mind, instead of being active in the dream or active in the waking using the sense organs, the mind has gone to sleep. The mind has resolved itself into a causal condition. And in that condition, there is no subject-object duality. There is no knower known. There is no ahankara, I notion, coming and saying, oh, I'm deep sleeping, you know. There's no commentary going on at all. It's all an unmanifest condition. Same consciousness, same conscious being is illumining now that ajnanam, that total ajnanam, that total ignorance where there is no expression of duality or subject-object. There's no expression of anything. It's all unmanifest condition. Now the same consciousness, the same me, is now illumining that. When I wake up from that, I remember what that was like. I say, in deep sleep, there's no subject-object, there's no knower known, I'm not aware of anything. You know, I'm just completely, there's no dream, there's no waking state, there's no objects, there's no subject-object relationship. I can go on and on about it. Because I slept so deeply, I was not disturbed at all. Okay, that's memory. That's my memory of this state when the antakarana is in causal condition. Now, conscious being is illumining that state of experience. It's an avastha. It's a state of experience. When I come back to the waking state, I now comment on that. Just as like when I come back from the dream state, I comment on that. The dream state I'm more familiar with, because when I think of myself, I think of myself as a knower. But for me to be a knower, somebody subject-object, I am a knower, that means I have to be somebody who has, first of all, sense organs, to perceive sense objects, and I have to have a mind. I have to be the mind, right? Which utilizes the sense organs to gain vrittis, to gain thought modifications. Or I have to be the mind in order to have an ahankara, I am doing this, I am doing that. I have to have a mind to have memories and all of these type of things, to have imaginations. All of these functions, which are known, right, belong to the mind and the sense organs. You see that? Like, if I remove, just practically speaking, if I remove from myself my sense organs, you know, my eyes, my sense of hearing, my sense of touch, my sense of sight, my sense of taste, my sense of smell, if I remove these sense organs from me, say, here I am, this person, remember who is now, you know, has no functioning sense organs. What is my relationship to the world? Where's the waking state for me? No sense organs. That means I don't see anything, I don't hear anything, I don't taste anything, I don't smell anything, I don't feel anything. So what would the body be like for me? Where would it be? The body, for you, the body would be here, but for me, where would it be? I require my sense organs to experience the world. And so the knowership of the world depends on the sense organs, not on consciousness, it depends on the sense organs. You know? What about my mind, which is an instrument which I illumine? The mind is known, all of your thoughts are known, the ahankara is known, the I notion is known, the memories are known. All of these are vrittis, thought modifications in the mind, right? Emotions are known. All of these belong to the mind. The mind is an upadhi, it's a conditioning adjunct that belongs within that exists within duality. So now, if I remove my sense organs, the waking state is gone. What if I remove my mind? The mind is an instrument that exists within duality. So say I don't have my mind. Where's the dream world? Where are the thoughts? Where's the ahankara? Where's subject-object relationship? Where's knower known? Right? It's not going to be there without a mind. And so now you think, okay, we have the waking state, we have which conscious being illumines, we have the dream state which conscious being illumines, right? My being, me, illumines that. And there's something else to notice here before we go again into the deep sleep state. Here I am, the waker. I'm sitting here with this body, mind, sense organs. You know, all of you are too, we're aware of each other. Okay. So I am now the waker in the waking state, all of us are. When you go to the dream state, there is no waking state. The waking state is displaced by the dream state. So now we're in the dream state, okay? Here we are, I am a character in the dream, say. I'm a character in the dream, knowing you, carrying on with all of you, in my dream, right? And so that now subject-object relationship is there, you know? But I have a different body. I have a different body, and I'm meeting with different people. And the body could be, I could be an old body, a young body, it could be a male body or female body, it could be an animal body, it could be a devata, it could be any kind of body. But that's my body, and it's not somebody else's body, it is my body. My body in the dream state. And my experiences in the dream state. Now, so am I the waking body, or am I the dream body? The waking state is displaced by the dream state. The dream state is displaced by the waking state. Right? And so, if that is so, who am I? I have to be the one who's not displaced. Right? Because it's my waking state and it's my dream state. But everything in the waking state is displaced by everything that is in the dream state. You see that? There's what we call anvaya vyatireka. It goes like this. It's a logic that there's not much you can do about it. It's just a simple factual fact. This is the anvaya vyatireka logic. And it shows how two things can be connected, one with the other. The example they use is like, when this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. If that's true, the envy is positive. When this is, that is. The vyatireka is negative. When this is not, that is not. If that's the case, I can say there's a relationship. But what if it goes like this? When this is, that is. When this is not, that still is. Then what's the relationship? Right? When this is, that is. When this is not, that still is. That means there's no relationship, because this thing can come and go and it doesn't affect me. And so when we apply this, first of all, to the waking and dream, it's like this, when the dream state is, I am. But when the waking state is, I am. And when the waking state is, I am. But when the dream state is, which displaces the waking state, I still am. So what about me still is? Look at what's displaced. In terms of your experience, in terms of your being, look at what is displaced. The dream world, the waking world, is displaced by the dream world. The waking character, whoever you're identified with, is displaced by the dream character. Right? The waking meal that you had is displaced by the hungry child in the dream state. These two states displace each other. Right? Experientially, and yet you are the self of both. You don't have any confusion there. When you wake up, you say, I dreamt last night. I, the one who am here in this waking state, I had this wild dream last night. I had this dream last night. It was my dream. So then you ask, who was it? Because it was you. It's your dream. Who was that? Who was that? That's equally present in both states. It's not going to be and cannot be an experience that has been displaced. This is a little bit, this deserves some contemplation, this. Yourself, the self that you are, right, is not going to, let's see how to say this, even on the level of experience, let alone the solidity of this room, just on the level of experience,
If you can still be here, yourself here, in the absence of an experience, any experience, even a subtle experience, doesn't matter, any experience, any imagination, if you can be here with or without that experience, you can be here with the experience and you are here without the experience, that means that that experience, whatever it may be, is not fundamental to your being. Simply because you can be without it. If you can be without it and you still are, then that anvayavithireka doesn't apply. There's no real connection there. And now, if you, everybody see how that is? Just don't even think it about, as don't get into matter at this point. We'll get into matter, hard matter later, you know. But just think of it now in terms of experience, because that's actually the most profound. Any experience that you can be without is not you. It's simple, right? You are there. The experience is gone. You're still there. This is so profound because look at how fast the world is moving, how fast all of your thoughts are coming and going, all of your emotions are changing. Everything is in continual flux, coming and going. You're not. This was my experience. It's called pratyabhijna. This was my experience, then this was my experience, then this was my experience, and this was my experience, and this was my experience, and the self of all of them. They've all come and gone. I'm still here. I'm not touched by my experience. When we do contemplation, like with the contemplation that we did now, you notice that your being is silent and stable. Your being is steady. It's stable. It's absolutely stable. Nothing can displace you in any way. It's when you recognize, just in meditation, you recognize that. You know, all of these thoughts, so you gently, I said gently focus on your being and don't try to get rid of your thoughts. Let them be. So you can see what they are. They have no effect on you at all. They don't touch you at all. You know? They don't displace you in any way. They displace each other, but they don't displace you. They don't touch you. So now look at the waking and dream. The dream displaces the whole waking world. Completely displaces the whole waking world. Nothing happens to you. Just like throughout the day, nothing happens to you. Throughout your emotions, throughout the vrittis, that thought modifications that pass, nothing happens to you. Waking state displaced by the dream state. Absolutely nothing happens to you. Okay. Now, but still, you know, waking and dream are kind of, they have some similarity because at least within there's some knowership, so I can kind of hang on to that. In the deep sleep state, the sense organs are withdrawn, and the mind, the manas, the mind, the buddhi, whole antakaran, the whole mind is withdrawn in unmanifest condition. There's no subject object. There's no knowership. Right? So that's not me, because I only think of myself as a knower. I'm a conscious being, I must be a knower. Your being is not a knower. If your being was a knower, then how can there be a dvaita? How can there only be one being? How can the conscious being that I am be the conscious being that you are? I don't know what you know. I'm not having your experiences. It's your mind and sense organs that are giving you all of these experiences. Consciousness is what illumines them all. So consciousness itself is not a knower. You need to be conscious. It's the consciousness being used by those instruments that allow for this knowership. But it's not from your own side, from the side of your being. You're not a knower. You simply are. You simply are conscious being, which is whole and complete and full, this me, that is present to all experience. Now, when you start seeing like the dream, the deep sleep is a real bugaboo for people because I'm not there. Because you think that your being must be a knower. It is not a knower. It's the luminary because of which everything is known. But itself is not doing anything. You could start. So let's go back to the deep sleep state. When your mind is in resolved, in deep sleep condition, the same conscious being now is illumining. That's sattva. The mind is sattva. Sattva means it reflects consciousness as though manifest consciousness. But it is in a resolved condition. It's not functioning. It's asleep.
Right.
The sattva has gone into its unmanifest causal condition. And so now, being, awareness, yourself, this me, is illumining that. Just like it was illumining the dream, just like it was illumining the waking state. And so when you wake up from that waking, from that deep sleep state, you talk about that situation. I didn't know anything. There's no duality. There's just ignorance. It's just one big, I don't know. Swamiji used to go like this. Deep sleep state is like, I don't know. I don't know anything. Right? And they're without any words. Without any words, no commentary. But then, when you're awake, you remember that. You remember. So you have knowledge of that ajnanam in the form of memory. With the dream, you have knowledge of all of the activities that went on in the dream in the form of memory. It's the same. Right? In the dream, your experience of the dream, when you're talking about it when you wake up, it's in the form of memory. You talk about your dream, you remember your dream, all the parts of the dream you couldn't remember, all of this type of thing. It's a memory. Deep sleep also, where everything's in that causal, unmanifest condition, you talk about that also. I slept so well last night. Memory. But now, what we have to recognize, all of these three states of experience, they negate each other. Right? They negate each other. When the one is, the other is not. Right? When the dream state is, when the waking state is, the dream state is not there. When the dream state is, the waking state is not there. When the deep sleep state is, neither of those are there. So these three states of experience negate each other, and yet you are there in all three. Right? If you are there in all three, if it's my waking state, my dream state, my deep sleep state, I cannot be any of the things that were in any one of those three states that was negated by another state. Because it's not there. That experience is not there. In the waking state experience is not there in the dream state. So I can't be anything that's in the waking state. And I can't be anything in the dream state that's negated by the waking state. And in the deep sleep, I can't even be a knower. Right? So the whole, everything to do with the upadhi, everything to do with maya, with the whole manifestation of the creation, is negated in terms of my being and my being. What does the Shastra say? It's just me, pure conscious being. Non-dual conscious being. This me is not doing anything. And so this waking dream deep sleep analysis, it's what we call avastatraya, these three states of experience, the sakshi. Who is the sakshi? Who is the conscious being that is present in all three of those states? That one, that me, is not dependent on any of those states. So what does that mean? My being is free of my body. It's free of my mind, it's free of my sense organs, it's free of my knowledges, it's free of this universe, it's free of the dream universe, it's free of the deep sleep universe, deep sleep experience. My being is not dependent on any of these things. Now that is exactly what we recognize in say, in the waking state, in contemplation, or in japa. I'm asking you to recognize that when we're contemplating the stable being, you notice that all of the experiences that are coming through are not touching you in any way. Right now, all experiences come into conscious being and they go out, continually moving through. Sometimes if you're just relaxing and you're just listening to the sounds, and here especially it's so nice, you listen to hear all of the birds and all of the nature sounds coming all around, coming through. But you are just silent, pure silent being, just me. Not an intellect, don't make it intellectual. That pure silent being that is me, not somebody else. You're not being touched at all. And now the question is, and that we recognize that the continuing unfoldment and with contemplation, is your nature desirable or not? Is your nature desirable? You know? When we ask that question, Swamiji always kind of jokes, one of the things he'll say is, if you don't think it's desirable, just look at what you do in deep sleep. And he'll go on and say, you know, you get a really good mattress. Good pillows. Comfy pillows. Get a nice comforter. Get all the windows open properly so the temperature is perfect. Yeah. And then you just snuggle up in your bed, get completely comfy, and blot out the entire universe. Not only that, you blot out the universe happily, blot out your whole mind. You even blot out the I thought. You blot out all experience, including yourself, in terms of your thinking, you know, your thinking or the ahankara. No experience. It's all blotted out. There's only one thing left, and that is me. And me is not knowing anything or doing anything. It's just my being, the being that I am. And we love to go to sleep. We love to be in that, what we call lazy man samadhi. Right? We love to just blot everything out, just be with myself. And then the alarm goes off. And Swamiji will do this great. You know, the alarm goes off. Just fall back. Just 5 more minutes. Just 5 more minutes. Be with myself. 5 more minutes. Like that. When no world, no dvaita, no duality, just me. Such ananda. Yourself is the very source of ananda. There's no one you love, no thing you love more than your being. You know, I think I told the story, I told it in here maybe, about my friend, I think a while ago, who was paraplegic. He was talking about, he got in an accident when he was about 18. Unfortunately, he broke his back and he was not able to be repaired. So he was paraplegic. So what he said was, to be able to walk again, I would give up absolutely everything. I would strip off all of my clothes naked and just walk out. I would just walk out, you know. I don't want nothing. I want nothing. I would just go with nothing if I could walk again.
So, wow. Yeah.
But then if I were to ask him, we talked about this kind of joking later. Yeah, but that's true. I totally understand that. But would you rather be alive or dead? Because he was saved. You know, he was saved. Would you rather be alive or dead? No, I would rather, of course, I'd rather be alive. Yeah. I want to be. Why? Why do you want to be? Just think of this. Why do you want to be? Yeah. Let the experiences, the bad experiences, let those things go away from me. Let me be. If you start doing contemplations around this, what you start to realize is that actually there is nothing more beloved than you, than your own being. That which is most dear to you is your own being. Give up anything to protect your own being. Nothing's as important as that. Yourself is very, the most, we say the self is the most dear. Yourself is the most dear. So that dearness is something to be recognized, what they mean by that. That which is most dear is most beloved is what? It's not going to be something that makes you miserable. It's the very nature of ananda, that which, you know, that which is the beloved is ananda. So how is it that even, this is the question, even at this moment with, you know, maybe agitations in your mind or cramps in your body or whatever it happens to be, you know, whatever is going on, you know, at this very moment, your being is still the most beloved. And it's not flashing red lights. You know, or Christmas tree lights. It's not doing anything. It just is you. So it's a real, I consider it real kind of almost like an awakening when you recognize the beloved nature of yourself, how dear it is, how dear it is to you. And then you start getting to know yourself and you see there is no ananda, there is no joy in the world or bliss experience that even compares with your own being, with the nature of your own being. There is nothing more dear. No. And so the recognition, that recognition of the kind of the timelessness of that beloved being, you know, is moksha. Say the unfoldment is taking place of Vedanta. You are timeless, you're free, free of time and space, you're free of change, you will last forever. Your being, the being that you are, will be forever. And it happens to be really miserable. And it's going to go on forever, changelessly. You've been covering it up all this time, but when we get down to the nitty-gritty, it is hell. A timeless hell. Nobody would fall for that. The one thing that is not a timeless hell, really, you know, is your own being. But the thing is, the ananda is a misleading word. I think the better word is that which is the most beloved, the most dear to you. And then when you start maybe using words like that, just talking from my own experience, using words like that, that which is really the most dear. Because really what is the most dear, the most loved is ananda, is wholeness and fullness. Then you can start to recognize not a conceptual idea of self, but your own being, which is that. And then you start to see why it is that. What about you is most dear? And it's not the same as something that exists within duality. It's not the same as a bliss experience in your mind. It's unique, that dearness, that ananda is unique to you, to your being. It's not an experience to be had in the world. There's only one such experience, and that is the self-evident experience of your being. And so getting to know yourself, like when we do these meditations, and hopefully at the time of teaching, kind of the veils get opened a little bit, and you recognize, you know, when you start to recognize, then you recognize more. When you start to be with yourself, you start to be with yourself more because of who you are, because of what your nature is. And then you recognize that this nature, this really most beloved nature of my being, is the very being of Ishvara. It is the Atma, the self that I am, is the Paramatma of Ishvara. It's the very self of Ishvara, that which is the most dear, most beloved. So this whole manifest creation is a display of the wholeness of myself. You know? So then with all the Jiva Srishti, we create all kinds of karma, all kinds of mistakes, but if you think of this, your own being, and then think of this whole universe as much as you can possibly imagine it, it's so huge you can barely get there at all, but just to imagine this whole infinite universe, you know, as a huge infinite mandala, actually, or something, of this, of your nature. And it's a beautiful type of contemplation. So this, anyway, to wind up this waking dream, deep sleep, it's a prakriya. This is a particular teaching methodology to help you to recognize the freedom of your being from these three states of experience, which also eliminates knowership. You remain as the conscious being from which all the whole display comes. But you're not a knower. That's why there can be only one self. You don't need to be a knower. You don't want to be a knower. Knowership is irrelevant. It just belongs to Maya. It's totally irrelevant to your being. That's why in contemplation you just see it. Am I a knower? No, not really. And japa is very good for that. You recognize the wholeness of your being, me, of my own self, and how full and complete and beautiful it is. Okay, why don't we stop there? swastit prajapya paripalyantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane vyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshati parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobarahitah brahmana santu nirbhayah om sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma antargamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
That's it.
The term
Sakshi.
Sakshi,
yeah,
is often translated as witness.
Yes, because in the Drik Drisha Viveka teaching methodology, you start out with, like, this body is known by the sense organs. The sense organs are known by the mind. The mind is known by the Sakshi. So you go to the witness consciousness. Mm-hmm. The Sakshi is heuristic, means that as once we get to the Sakshi, as a witness, and then we drop off all of the things that are so-called witnessed, then there's nothing but consciousness. So there's no function of witnessing, there's no mind, there's no duality there for there to be witnessing. There's just conscious being, which is self-evident. So the Sakshi is a teaching device that once you've eliminated everything else, the Sakshi is also eliminated. It's part of the teaching methodology. Otherwise, but that's a really good question, because otherwise, because of the word like Sakshi, then you think that, oh, in the end, I'm a witness. Mm-hmm. No, in the end, you're not a witness. Mm-hmm. It's that once you've done the Drik Drisha Viveka all the way to conscious being, then you eliminate all of the things that have been objectified, and then there's no witness because there's nothing to witness. There's just consciousness, right? The mind is not there. The sense organs are not there. There's no duality there, so there's just consciousness. And so then, when even in meditation or at the time of teaching, you recognize your own being, you really just are. You're a conscious being, you're me, that's me. It's not even doing anything. You know? But from the standpoint of the upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs, all kinds of things are being done, and all of them enjoy consciousness. That's the satyam mitya, that we have to understand, that the upadis, the conditioning adjuncts, totally depend 100% for conscious being on consciousness. You know, they don't have anything themselves. Like the pot has nothing without the clay. Nothing, zero. The whole universe has nothing without conscious being. If you pull the being out, there's nothing. Conscious being is what is actually here. Everything else is just depends on that and has no independent being of its own. Which you can establish in so many different ways. One is that everything's infinitely divisible, so you can't find anything. The other is everything comes into being and goes out of being, so it has non-existence on either end. So you can't find a thing here in the creation.
But consciousness seems to have a quality to it. It seems to have a sense of well-being, or there's some kind of presence that you can notice that...
Yes, but the presence is not away from conscious or conscious being itself. Conscious being is what it is, you know, and it is whole. We use words like whole and complete, stable. These are all pointers, you know. Even if we say anand, anand is kind of a difficult word because we've associated it with bliss. So instead of ananda, we say wholeness or fullness, or that total being complete, being loved, we use these words to point, because these words also don't work. They can only work if they're used as pointers, so that the mind recognizes what that which is there, but not objectifiable. That's the only way the words work, because you are there. Mm-hmm. And the mind can be directed to that recognition. You know, actually it recognizes itself as something which is illumined, right? And then recognizes me, not as an object, but as just the conscious being that I am. So sometimes in meditation we say, just be yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you negate everything and then just be yourself.
But that seems to when you recognize yourself as this wholeness, it seems like it's kind of an experience or it...
Well, it's not a non-experience because it's self-evident.
Okay.
It's not going to be nothing. Say if you say consciousness is a non-experience, what does that mean? It's not there or what? Mm-hmm. Because it's conscious being, it's not an experience as an object. Objectified experience is what we usually think. But it's consciousness, so it's its own experience.
Yeah, I think what I'm looking for is an experience that's outside of time and space that I experience.
Well, you do experience because it's self-evident, but you don't experience it as an object. It's like the sun, say the sun illumines itself because it's luminosity. You don't have to bring in another sun to light it up. Consciousness is its own experience because it's consciousness. You don't have to bring in a subject-object relationship. It's its own experience because it is consciousness.
But it's not like a sensation.
It is only what it is.
Yeah.
You have to kind of differentiate all sensations and perceptions and anything that can be objectified. You have to differentiate all of those things and then just see what's left. And what is left is not something you can get rid of. That's telling also. When you recognize yourself and try to get rid of it, try to change it, try to make it better, try to make it worse, try to put a bag over it, try to do anything. Nothing happens. You can't. It is absolutely stable. There's nothing else like that. Every experience that you have, you can negate and have another experience. But not this. This is not, doesn't participate in this coming and going of that takes place in duality. You cannot do it. You can't objectify it to make it participate in time and space and be differentiated. Let me differentiate this consciousness from this consciousness. There's no way to differentiate one consciousness from another consciousness because it doesn't exist within time and space to be divisible. You know, that's why I can say this being that I am is you. It's only one of us. It's only one being.
So the experience is, it is what it is, consciousness.
It is what it is, but I couldn't very well teach that of consciousness. It is what it is. That has to be unfolded, pointed.
Just wanted to say that I never quite got with such clarity how thoroughly the deep sleep does away with knowership. That knocks me out.
It's a knockout. Yeah. It is. It is. Yeah. Knocks it right out.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. It is. Notice we're a bunch of unique little knowers.
Yeah.
Without any instruments of knowing, you could say we're in consciousness. It's not possible for consciousness to be a knower without the mind and the sense organs. There has to be some sort of mind built into consciousness. But that's not true either, because it's objectified and the mind can go into deep sleep and not even be functioning. Yeah.
On the anesthetic also, I mean...
Anesthetic is really frightening. Who's had an anesthetic? Mm-hmm. I have. Mm-hmm. You know what's weird about it?
No.
I'll tell you what it's weird about.
Great.
It.
Oh. It's great. You don't feel it. It's
no, but it's like this. They ask you to count.
Yes.
Back, okay. 100, 99, 98, 97. Then you open your eyes and it's over.
Yeah. Yes.
I think it's fascinating.
Fascinating. Yeah. I thought it was one of the weirdest things I've ever
seen. Yes, it is. It is.
Now that's just part of deep.
Yeah. It's the deepest. That's like it's deepest. As deep as you can go. Yes. You know, they knock out everything. But can you imagine? I mean, 199.98.
Oh, yeah. What happened?
Right? Yeah, what happened?
What happened?
Well, they give you drugs to specifically make you forget, though.
They did.
Amnesia.
Amnesia.
They yeah. give you drugs to give you amnesia.
I don't know enough about it.
So that you don't remember.
I know that
it's more than just deep sleep, because they want you to not remember.
Not remember.
I mean, like when you have a colonoscopy or something, you don't have to remember that.
No, but when you have surgery, you should do that. They don't do that, though. That would be good.
But I want you to remember to pine.
They don't want you to remember,
but
yeah.
You know, one friend of mine had a relatively serious surgery we had to go under. He's an older, in his 70s. And so he decided to play one of his favorite pieces of music during the surgery, you know. Just to, you know, kind of go to sleep with them and have that music playing. And then after he woke up, he could never play that music again. It really was disturbing to him.
Really?
Yeah. His favorite. Yeah. Because it was associated with pain he couldn't remember, I guess. Yeah, he told me about that. Would have never, I mean, yeah. Isn't that something? I mean, it makes sense.
See
in
that. Mm-hmm. It's not a good experience.
So some, yeah, it was not a good experience going on. Yeah.
Some part of him was aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. They,
yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
So what is the relationship between the three states? Because when I dream, I seem to dream about the same people as in the waking state.
Yeah.
When I wake up from yesterday to today, I'm the same person, not a different person.
The waking state, and with this waking body, is Ishwara Srishti. It means it's Bhagavan's creation. This body belongs to Ishwara. It's not something that, it's stable, it's sthira. It belongs to Ishwara. Whereas the dream belongs to the jiva. Right? That dream comes from your mind, is experienced by you, resolves back into you.
Oh.
See? However, so we could say in reference to the waking state, Swamiji will say, well, in reference to the dream state, the waking state is a longer joke. He goes, he laughs. It's a longer joke. Means, you know, the dream rises and sets as jiva srishti out of the mind of the individual. But when you're dreaming, right, this, and when you're waking, that same reality applies in reference to the conscious being that's illumining it, right? The dream state, even though it comes out of your mind, creates a world which is objectified, which has characters in it, which has the whole thing, very similar to the waking state. It's just not sthira, because it's pratibhasika. Pratibhasika means it's subjective. It comes from you, goes back into you. The dream state also, in a sense, is your the causal condition of your antakarana, of your mind, when it goes into causal condition. However, that causal condition doesn't enjoy any, when it's in causal condition, there's no differentiation. And so your dream, your deep sleep is going to be the same as my deep sleep, is the same as anybody's deep sleep, because it's going into a causal condition where there's no, in that condition, there's no differentiation.
That's interesting. So that kind of allows for the whole Jungian interpretations of dreams, because if they're coming out of the jivas, everything, then of course they would apply to all the things that jivas working out, so to speak.
Yeah, it comes out of your psyche.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because of that, you know, there's really interesting things you can do in terms of dream work, and taking your dreams somewhat seriously, if you're interested in that, you know.
And in terms of consciousness, then, these three different states, the waking, dream, and deep sleep, none of those states are as valuable as consciousness, or it doesn't make any difference to consciousness itself?
They're not the same order of reality. They're mitya. Mm-hmm. Mitya means they have no being other than consciousness. They don't create really a second thing in any real way.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't affect, they don't affect consciousness in any way.
Mm. So they don't really matter from the perspective of consciousness? Or do
you know, it depends, like when you use, oh, that doesn't matter, you're really within duality, making a judgment, calling these things matter, these things don't matter.
Yeah.
But so the relationship of consciousness to Maya is not it matters or it doesn't matter. There's nobody there to think it matters or it doesn't matter. It's a reality. It's what is. It's the way things are. You know, even if you say that the whole Maya, the whole manifested creation of them is Mithya, that's not a judgment call. Then you don't say, oh, it's only Mithya. It really doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with mattering. It has to do with the nature of reality. That something is Mithya means that by its nature it has a dependent reality and its truth of it is Satyam, is Brahman. That's its truth. But that's not a denigration of Maya. That's just, when we're talking about the whole creation and what's what, you know, the Maya is Mithya in that its being, the being that enjoys, is Brahman. That's why Advaita. But there's no judgment call here.
Yeah.
That all takes place within duality.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's not right. Also, you're missing Ishwara. You're missing kind of the beauty, the majesty of the of Brahman and of this incredible creation. It's not, shouldn't be treated in that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's all Maya, it's only an illusion. What do you mean by that? It's only illusion.
So,
it doesn't make sense.
So you don't make, there's no value judgment to be made, whether the Maya is there or not there, or whether there's a waking state or a dream state.
It's not a value judgment. It's something to be understood. What's the value judgment? I say the dream is subjective, and the waking state is objective. Is that a value judgment or is it a fact?
Yeah, well, I keep thinking that's a fact, but I keep thinking one is more significant than the other, or?
Well, one is the self of the other, you know? But I don't know what you mean by more significant. If you want to say Brahman is what is actually the being that is actually here, right? Maya depends, this whole manifestation of the creation depends totally on Brahman for its being. Does that mean that it's less significant? I say this Dvaita doesn't apply. These terms don't apply.
Okay.
Well, what would be a better word to sort of say all of this is within Brahman? Is there a better word than within?
Well, if we use Sanskrit, we have words like all Brahman is the Adhishtana. This is Mithya. If once we say this whole creation is Mithya, it's Adhishtana is Brahman. Then you totally understand what's meant. If you say it's within Brahman, then you have to know, you have to say what you mean by within, because if there's some Brahman and Maya is stuck inside of it. It's not that. If you're saying it's within Brahman, you mean there's nothing else but Brahman, but then you have to talk about saying within. I think the best way is to talk about what Adhishtana means, what Maya means, what Mithya means, because then then you have the words, the right words.
And it's accurate.
Mm. It's like, because you're not going to say, well, the pot is within the clay. Mm.
You know? I'm trying to find a good word.
Yeah. The pot's not within the clay. The pot is only clay, but the clay is free of the pot. Pot depends upon clay. Clay is free of the pot. That's Satyam Mithya. That's Adhishtana. Clay is the Adhishtana, that which the Mithya depends on for its being.
Mm.
You know? So if we use a word like within, then we have to joke about using that word and bringing the clay pot analogy and things like that to make it clear. The main thing is to understand the Satya-Mithya relationship. Because we have drishtantas for it. We have illustrations for it. Like clay pot is a one wave ocean. Wave ocean water is one. Rope snake is one. And they even use in the Chandogya Upanishad the nail cutters. Nail cutters that are made of iron. There's really only iron there. They used to have nail cutters. They use the clay pot and nail cutters and I think one other thing.
Red hot iron ball.
Yeah, the red hot iron ball is a little different for that one. That shows the anyonya adhyasa, the mutual superimposition. You have fire here and an iron ball here. But instead you see them as only one red hot iron ball.
And if you don't know fire and iron, what they are, then it looks like this is one thing that is heavy, round, hot, and brilliant red. That's one entity. The viveka now has to be to see the fire is fire and the iron ball is iron ball. So here, in your own experience, conscious being and the body, mind, sense organs are is a mutual superimposition. Or I can take this body, mind to be consciousness. I don't know consciousness per se. I don't know myself as I am. I only know myself, the mind only knows myself from the standpoint of itself. You know, and it always enjoys consciousness. So it takes itself to be the conscious being like a red hot iron ball.
Yeah.
So that's also a really, really famous illustration that we use.
Where does that come from? Do you know, does it come from a
Upanishad?
Upanishad?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Because it comes like in Atma Bodha and some of the Prakarna Granthas, but maybe it's in Upanishad also. But it's been passed on in the tradition because it's so kind of effective.
It works.
It works, yeah.
It's we mistakenly take ourselves as a knower. That is also adyoma.
Adyasa. Yes, it is, because I'm superimposing my mind and sense organs onto me.